Call the meeting in order. It's adjourned. Meeting is adjourned. Chino Basin Water Master appropriative pool meeting is not adjourned. Okay, we're in order now.
Screwed him all up.
Okay, any changes regarding the
agenda? None.
I did have a question. Is mm-hmm. I noticed that there was no confidential session item on here.
No.
Okay.
It's always up, you know, you can always add it as a pool, but rather than having it automatically on, we're leaving it off and then having the board chairman then add it on.
Well, I guess, and I'll refer to legal counsel a little bit, is we're making an effort to follow the provisions of the Brown Act, and normally you only add items that are urgency in nature, so ongoing litigation is not an urgency item, but okay.
It can be, it just depends on the circumstances.
Have consent calendar items 1A, B, and C, and I'd like to pull item 1C from the consent calendar. So I
move the balance.
Okay.
Second.
Okay. Any opposed? Items approved.
Comment. Item 1B, financial reports.
Okay.
When I look to scan through this real quick, we're not including any account numbers, checking account numbers, credit card numbers on there, are we?
No.
So excluded from it, correct?
Yeah, they're all, they're, none of them are on here for obvious reasons.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Consent calendar items 1A and B have been approved. Consent calendar item 1C. Just as I understand the application.
Did we get an approval on 1A and B?
Yes.
Yes,
you
did. Okay. All right. Yes, you did.
I guess it just went by me so fast. Okay. Missed it. Okay, item 1C. 1C is, there was some discussion, as a matter of fact, at the board meeting. We did this as just a report. It came up all of a sudden, just in time to get this agenda out. Danny is not here. She had a car problem on the way back up here from the ag pool, and so she's en route, but she had to take her car in to get some emergency work done on it. And she's the one who has been processing this application. But essentially what's happening here is San Antonio Water Company, working with the city of Upland, is recharging into Upland Basin from a fire hydrant. Actually, it's an importation of water into the Chino Basin, and this is an application that's going to be, as we always do, to process it. And I know very little about the issues other than what Danny has told me and what I've heard from Upland.
Okay. So. Well, my questions are more about the application in terms of duration, and I see the quantity of water. It's 300 acre feet.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's a one time request or if it's a approval to do this on a reoccurring basin.
No, it's every instance is taken individually. So this application is for 300 acre feet for this time only. If they want to do another 300 feet, they got to come back with another application.
Okay, because our application to recharge through our injection facilities is certainly has a defined quantity, and it's open ended, it's ongoing. We can do that,
and that's the way it was written. But I don't think I don't know what their intent is in terms of additional. Maybe Sean knows, but this right now, as far as I know, is this is a one time event that that they have a situation occurring, and so they're going to do it. Right. It could occur in the future, but it's certainly not going to be
just a
ongoing.
And
no,
San Antonio's not here. So.
Yeah, Charles sent me an email, said he couldn't make it, had a personal issue come up. Essentially, they've got some excess six basins water that they'll essentially, under that judgment, lose. And so they asked if there was a way that we could help them spread in the Chino Basin. So and that's the situation.
Okay. So it's a one-time request for this fiscal year?
Yeah, through the end of the calendar year.
Okay.
Motion to approve.
Do I have a second?
Second.
Anybody opposed? Item passes unanimously. Business items, Chino Basin Water Master Annual Audit for fiscal year ending 2010.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, this is an item that comes up every year. We have an annual audit done by Meyer, Hoffman, and McCann. This is the same audit firm that works with IEUA. They have been our auditors for a number of years now. And they finished their audit recent, and this is again, this audit is coming through the Water Master process as information to receive and file. As we have had in the past, no identified deficiencies or internal control problems within the Water Master, so a clean audit. And Joe is here to explain a little bit more about the audit and to answer any questions you might have.
Thank you. The audit, again, was for the period June 30th, 2010. We closed the books for that period in mid-July. In early August, we had the field work from the auditors come out. They worked basically for about a week and a half out here doing their field work. In mid-September, they provided the first run, first blush of the financials. We had different recalculations, which I'll talk a little bit later. Once those were completed, they actually issued their report on October 11th, 2010, which was basically 30 days earlier than what was done the previous year. And the board presentation will be January 27th, 2011, when the representative from the audit firm will come and present the actual findings to the board. The report this year, same as last year and previous years, is an unqualified report, which means that there were no findings. The report was accurate. Along with that, they did not identify any deficiencies in internal controls. We had no new accounting policies. They encountered no difficulties in performing their audit. The financial statements did include some reclassifications. If you recall, there's $415,000 of checks. There's three checks that the non-ag members have not cashed. It was the opinion of the auditors and myself that that needed to be reclassified, so we reclassified that. There was no disagreements between the auditors and myself or any other persons of management at Watermaster, and Watermaster did not consult with any other auditors or any other attorneys or any other representatives in regards to the audit. And with that, I'll entertain any questions. Yes?
It might be one and the same question, but go to page P65, and we'll look at the following page. Joe, under your liabilities, accounts payable is up by about a factor of six.
That's the $415,000 we accrued, in essence, put back into the liabilities, $415,000 worth of those three checks, and we also increased the assets by $415,000.
We have three checks outstanding from the non-ag pool.
Okay, that totals $800,000. You're still missing $1,000,001. Well, it may be answered if you look over on page P66, the next page. Operating expenses jumped up about $7 million from year to year, and that's primarily in the area of groundwater replenishment and
Correct.
Water purchases.
Right.
I'm sorry, which?
I'm on page P66.
Page 7.
Operating
of the
expenses.
Oh, page 7, okay.
Page 7, I'm sorry. Groundwater replenishment and other water purchases. Is that just reflective of increased cost for MET, increased replenishment?
No, that was actually we had around $6 to $7 million worth of replenishment water throughout the year.
Robert, I think your question's related to the $1.1 million that you're not seeing reflected under the...
Yeah, that's not... Yeah, you're right.
Under the total payables.
On page 6 then, Joe, let's go back there. I'm still trying to figure out the difference between $1.97 million in accounts payable line versus $390,000. And you said $407,000 was the outstanding checks from the non-ag pool?
That is correct.
And about $415,000 was something else?
The same thing.
Without having the actual information right here, more than likely that's timing issues of when the payables were issued and when they weren't issued. The previous year, I would have to make the assumption that there weren't many liabilities sitting on the books. At the end of 2010, we had liabilities that had not been paid yet.
We can get you additional information on that, Bob.
Well, just a big drop in total net assets, $2 million.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I don't have any further questions.
Any other questions, Joe? Do I have a motion to approve?
So approved. So moved.
And the action is to
receive and file.
Receive and file. Okay, the action is to receive and file. Motion made by Cucamonga. Do I have a second?
Second.
Okay, anybody opposed? Item passes. Item 2B, financial analysis.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, when Joe came in, that was in the middle of a very difficult time here at Watermaster, and there were a lot of, for a lot of reasons, people were interested in getting a great deal of detail about what was going on at Watermaster. Without judgment, it's Watermaster wants to comply and provide as much information as possible. So one of the things that I asked Joe to investigate was putting together a financial tool that had been talked about, but we had yet to implement here at Watermaster, and that was an expected cost and income analysis of all of the internal accounting here at Watermaster, so that we could start to get a better read of what was happening during the course of the year at quarterly intervals. Actually, we do it monthly, but we'll only be bringing it through the process quarterly. And so this is normally something that would show up under the CEO report, but because this is the first time everybody's getting a chance to see this format, I wanted to spend a little more time on it and have a chance to have you take a look at it and provide feedback. But this is an opportunity to look at this internal accounting process so that we can judge how things are going through the year. Now, first of all, we're at the end of the first quarter, so the ability to predict is somewhat limited because you're only 25% of the way through the year. But because we had a great deal of discussion during the budget process and we made reductions in two key areas primarily. One of those was in the engineering area, a reduction of Wildermuth programs within the Watermaster this year. We were much more deliberate in how we approached what projects we would be authorizing this year for Wildermuth, and also in the area of legal. You might remember Watermaster had come out with an original recommendation of around $900,000 for legal, and we reduced that down to $450,000 and took $145,000 and put it into a reserve. Those were all dynamics that took place during the budgeting process. This is going to be able to help us understand whether or not those decisions for Wildermuth are in fact coming along as we had predicted. Also, it helps gives us a chance to look at, and Joe will go through the legal aspect, which is where we are having some difficulties at this point. So, Joe, he's got a PowerPoint presentation we'll walk you through, and then take questions at the end.
Again, this period, first quarter is for July 1st, 2010 through September 30, 2010. If you recall, the previous reports that were provided basically gave a snapshot of year-to-date compared to a year-end budget. In my opinion, that report lacked depth and detail to provide any kind of financial information on where you were going, the trends, or any type of analysis. So one of the things that I created basically took the report and segregated into three separate categories. The first category, or first section, just looked at the current month. So that's basically taking that full year's budget, breaking it down into 1/12, and then comparing it to the actual month. The second section or category, you basically look at the year-to-date. So for this period, this is 3/12, or 25% of the budget. And then the final category or final section is basically the year-end 100% of the budget compared to where we estimate or where we think we'll be at year-end. Each section looks at actual versus budget. It provides an over and under dollar variance so that you can look to see whether you're over or under on dollars. And then a percent of budget basically shows if you're 100% of budget, that's a positive variance because you've either spent up to or below the budgeted amount. If you're above 100%, that's a negative variance because you've spent more than the allocated budget. And this is the report, basically. I apologize that it's very difficult to see here, but in your package...
this comes out of the Wildermuth plan.
That's worse than Wildermuth.
Yeah. It's labeled as B5, so you'll find it in the packet along with the financial presentation as B5. Basically, in a nutshell, for the month of September, when you compare actuals to budget, we're $143,000 under budget. If you look at the first 3 months, year-to-date for September 30th, we're under budget for the first 3 months, $237,000. And as we mentioned before, the projected, because we're only at 3 months, it's very difficult to project where we're going to be at year-end. It's going to be, as we get closer to the six-month period in the 7 and 8 months, it'll be a lot easier to try to track and get a better projection. Even though we were under budget in a lot of categories, we're over budget in the items that we knew in the budgeting process that we were going to be over, and that's the areas of legal. If you look at the far right-hand column where it says 100% budget, that's basically... That's where we took the budget and then allocated it out into individual programs. Last year, the budget was basically wrapped up in the 6900s. This year, I've taken it and allocated it out by general ledger, by legal counsel type group. So you'll see that the piece two, we allocated at year end $50,000 for that. The Ontario Airport Plume, $15,000 for the year. Chino Airport Plume, $15,000. The DeSalter negotiations, when we created the budget, we didn't assume that there would be any expenses towards that. The Santa Ana River Project, $25,000. The purchase and sale, that's the paragraph 31, we didn't budget any amounts for that. The Santa Ana sucker, we didn't budget anything for that. And then the water auction, $40,000. Regional Water Quality Board, $15,000. Recharge Master Plan of $40,000. And then the legal counsel other, that $250,000, that's basically where we have the pool costs for the non-ag, the appropriators, the agricultural pool, the advisory board, the board, and then any personnel type. As you can see, the item, and then further down in the 6909 category, that's the $62,000, that is the regional board fine. So basically, if you look at where we are right now in the first 3 months, we're $136,000 over budget in the legal. If we bring in the contingency of $145,000, we basically would have or will erase that negative variance, but that does not account for the second, third, or fourth quarter of legal expenses, which we expect.
Mm-hmm. In essence, this is where, at the time we made the proposal on the budget, we, you know, as I had mentioned at the time, 10 out of the last 10 years we had been over budget on illegal. And what I think in these areas where we didn't budget, we didn't know things were going to happen or didn't think that things were going to happen at the magnitude that they are, those are the areas that are garnering a great deal of effort by our legal staff, and we're over budget. The areas that we can manage, the areas for the internal meetings, the personnel stuff, all the things that are really in the 7.3, and even the 7.393837, those are manageable, and those were under budget. But some of the areas that were over budget are areas difficult to manage because there's some, in many cases, outside our control. Mm-hmm. But this is still too little too early for us to make any adjustments to our budget. We're presenting this because we want you to see what the format looks like and understand what we're doing, and then when we come back at the 6 month, I suspect that this will be accompanied by some recommendations on moving some money within the budget to cover some of these categories. But right now, we're not going to be making any of those recommendations.
Okay. Joe, I have a couple questions on the highlighted items. The Chino Airport plume is, Watermaster took the lead on that negotiations based
correct
on the understanding that those costs would be recovered as part of any settlement. Is it then unreasonable to set up some sort of an account where we show an offsetting revenue and an equal amount potentially coming in? I mean, our finance, they have a term for it, but you're fronting money with the expectation that it's going to be recovered.
Reimbursement agreement.
Well, it's not.
We don't have an agreement, though, is the problem.
Well, we have a motion which says that we move forward subject to reimbursement of those costs.
I don't think the motion actually said that. The discussion that we had during the discussion of the motion has that reflected, but the motion itself didn't reflect that.
Okay. On the DeSalter negotiations, that's Watermaster's effort to
We have expressed that to CDA as well.
The Watermaster parties together to finalize their purchase agreements and address some of their outstanding items. I'm sorry, on the purchase and sale agreement, I missed what that is.
Oh, that's paragraph 31.
That's paragraph 31 motion.
That's the non-ag appeal,
so
and action and appeal.
What I'll do going in the future, I'll just change that to paragraph 31 because everyone understands that what paragraph.
My understanding, Watermaster Legal Counsel expenditures have been a lot more than $34,000.
Again, this is just this year that we've had. We didn't we have
this
some money in the previous.
September.
We have some expenses prior to that. A great deal of money expended prior to that. This is just this year's reflected, starting July 1.
Okay.
Some of that purchase and sale agreement, was it used for the auction agency? Or was that not?
No, and no, anything that we've done with the auction would have
just a couple lines below that. $1,000 account number 6907-3.
Had very little expenses there. Now, what we're showing you are the categories that we have broken down for this report. Internally, we have those same categories broken down even further internally. So we're breaking them down into further delineation, and those are available to anybody who wants to see them. So you can see it actually on any month, you can see exactly where we are in any of those categories in a great deal of detail. So, but this provides you considerably more detail. When we start coming back with discussion about moving money within the budget, this will help you understand exactly where we're moving it and why we're moving it. So no surprises.
So the legal expenses strictly related to the paragraph 31 is the
$34,000, account 6907-35.
In this fiscal year.
Now, if they lose the appeal, one of the things we were talking about was possibly reclaiming or getting reimbursement for
that. Yeah, this would be similar to what Chairman Kinsey is talking about in terms of the reimbursement, that there's potential for us to get reimbursement. And Joe and I have talked about the creation of he's got some ideas on how to handle that as an accounting to show that a potential will come again. But at this point in time, because we don't have an agreement, we don't have anything for documented, we don't show it. But if we do receive it in this fiscal year, then we'll work on getting it shown as income.
Can refresh my memory real quick. Santa Ana Sucker, what the heck was that again?
George?
Yeah, go ahead.
That's the critical habitat designation.
Doesn't sound right. Can we change it? Or just
no.
Like a sucker from Santa Ana or something. You
know? Yeah. Well, there's a lot of suckers in Santa Ana. But this
you was, look at it and say, what the heck are they talking
about? This one happens, to cling to rocks in the river. The other thing, as I mentioned and Joe mentioned, is that down at the bottom we do have the $62,000 currently we've expended on behalf of the fine, and that needs to be somehow or another rectified as to how we're going to pay for that.
Okay. And then finally, basically going forward each month in the three categories with general administration, we're each day, each month, we're continuing to monitor our expenses to make sure that we're within the budget. On the OBMP, we continue to monitor the Wildermuth expenses, work with them on a monthly basis, continue actively manage the legal expenses the best we can on those items that we can manage. Then on the project expenses, same as the OBMP, we continue to monitor and manage the Wildermuth expenses to match budget. And that's it.
Okay, is there any other questions, Joe?
I have a question, actually. I'm going back to the legal expenses. As I recall, during the budget discussions, we approved or recommended a specific budget amount for legal expenses with an appreciation and understanding you didn't have a reserve, so there would be a set-aside fund that was capped off. And it seems to me, looking at it, we're pretty drastically over our approved budget. And was my interpretation, and maybe I'm wrong, you can correct me, maybe remind me, that as we started to get over the budget, you were going to come back and tell us why we're over the budget, and then we would kind of incrementally approve more of that money to be funneled back in there. And
right.
Maybe I'm not reading this right, but it seems like we're just way, way over, and I'm not...
So far on the legal, we're $139,000 over our estimated budget at the end of the first quarter. We have $145,000 in that account. And because we still have not gotten to the end of that $145,000, I'm not recommending we move the $145,000 right now. But it's quite likely. In fact, I would predict we're going to do it. In January, when we come back with the second quarter report, it will be accompanied with budget requests to move that money into those accounts so that we don't show them as over. And then also it'll be accompanied with other requests to move money from areas that we appear to be not using it as fast as we had thought. So by year end we should be in balance.
Hopefully.
Yes.
Okay. The item before us is to receive and file as presented. Do I have a motion to that effect?
Motion.
Second.
Okay, I have a motion and a second. Any opposed? Passes unanimously. Land Subsidence Committee.
Yeah, I have Andy here who's prepared to talk a little bit about some of the items. He's the engineering consultant that's been assigned to the MZ1 committee. As you might all remember, for a number of years, the MZ1 committee has been working within the managed zone to come up with strategies and implement programs to help us better identify and understand the subsidence anomaly going on within that area, and to provide guidance criteria for us to make sure that we don't continue to move in the direction of a continued subsidence. That committee has been functioning very well. I think that the success there has been tremendous. But one of the things that we have in this process of developing additional knowledge, we have discovered that the circumstances that led to subsidence that reside within MZ1 are not solely confined to MZ1. And there are similar strategy or similar program processes, strategies that could be implemented in other management zones throughout the basin. And I think I'm fair in saying that the MZ1 parties who sit as part of the consulting entity for MZ1 are uncomfortable making recommendations for activities outside of that management zone without having parties from outside the zone sitting in on those meetings and participating in the discussion. And since Watermaster has discovered that there are these kinds of activities going on that could cause subsidence in the basin, the recommendation from the MZ1 committee was to transition this committee from solely a management zone or a managed zone area to a basin-wide subsidence committee, so that a more enlightened group could be developed on strategies basin-wide. And so that was the recommendation from the committee. Staff certainly agrees with it because we are discovering these anomalies everywhere, and we think that a discussion amongst all the parties is going to be far more fruitful than having just amongst the MZ1 group. So the recommendation is to transition from an MZ1 subsidence management program to a basin-wide and create instead a land subsidence committee made up of basin-wide parties.
Well, based on that report, why do we need a report from Andy?
Well, he's here to answer questions if you have questions about it. So, sure, could you put up the map? Topic, please?
Yeah. I believe that Ken just about said it all, but I did bring a graphic along just to illustrate an example. The managed area is outlined in purple, and the Chino Creek well field is down in the southern portion of this graphic, shown as six proposed wells that are colored in blue. You can also see the management zones outlined as red outlines, and this Chino Creek well field, there's a thread of subsidence that goes along with the construction and pumping of these wells, and it's a topic of discussion in the MZ1 technical committee, but obviously this well field spans both MZ1 and Prado Basin and MZ2, and the area that where additional monitoring for subsidence is being contemplated right now spans all these areas here. So the discussions in the MZ1 group are that, well, we certainly don't mind talking about potential expansion of monitoring into these areas, but it's outside of the original scope of Program Element 4 of the OBMP, which was to look at subsidence and abate and control it in Management Zone 1. And so this is where the discussion has been going, is we should be opening up this committee to all Watermaster parties, since all Watermaster parties are potentially part of the solution too, and contribute funds to the activities that occur in subsidence monitoring. So just brought along this figure here to illustrate that point, and I'm here to answer questions as well.
Any questions of Ken? Questions of Andy?
Mr. Chairman, just one question of Andy. Isn't there, correct if I'm wrong, but is there a direct correlation between recharge activities and the subsidence issue? And isn't the recharge activity should be helping take care of the subsidence issues as well, right?
I think the best way I can describe it is this way, that subsidence is caused by water level declines and by the geology. You have to have saturated clays that are draining and squeezing to cause subsidence. So the water level declines are controlled by recharge and by pumping. So it's all related, and any management plan that you might envision to control subsidence in the future, you want to look at both recharge and pumping as the potential solution.
Well, that seems to be more important than, like you said, to open it up to the Water Master family and all the parties, because if it's going to become a recharge issue as well, then that makes it much broader.
Certainly recharge, a wet water recharge, is one of the strategies that can be used to mitigate some of the potential issues that we have, especially over an MZ3. Others are in-lieu delivery or agreements to share water, or there's a lot of different strategies, injection. Those are all things that are somewhere contemplated in the recharge master plan. Others are formal arrangements between parties that would be encouraged through the committee to happen. There's a lot of different ways that we can handle these, but the biggest thing that we're trying to do is create an additional conversation about how we can make sure that as we develop this basin that we don't end up with a problem like we had in MZ1.
Just as a point of clarification, Andy, the land will subside with water extraction without underlying clay being part of the geologic substructure. But it'll be considered elastic subsidence. It'll go up and down with changes in groundwater level. Yes. So the concern is you know, changes in groundwater level will affect land surface levels, but some of it's elastic, some of it's inelastic. When you have a lot of clay lenses and the water goes out of those clay lenses and you get into permanent subsidence, that's part of the concern in lower management zone one. Are there any other questions?
I had a few questions, Chairman.
First of all, you said the managed area was identified in red.
There's a red line in terms of the managed zone 1, 2, and 3, that red line kind of going from north to south that you can see going through the middle of a thin red line. That's the line between the management zones.
Okay. I don't have to play with the airport is. That's the line between 1 and 2. Here it is.
Okay. I thought he was talking about identifying the managed area in red. Maybe I misunderstood.
The purple outline is the managed
area. You said red and purple. Okay. First thing. Second question I had was a lot of the references, past documents, past references, I'm not sure if it's peace agreement, judgment, what have you, made reference to the MZ, what have you. Categories, what have you. Now that we transition into not having this group, does that create a problem for some sort of point reference to documents or agreements that we had relative to MZ1 now that we transition over to this land subsidence? That's the first question. Second question I have is in the transition, the accounting in the past, if I'm not mistaken, the budget, what have you, has set up identifying these different zones. Now I'm assuming there'll be additional costs incurred with that because now you have to restructure that. Is that a large effort as well?
Let's approach them backwards, really. In terms of the monetary, I don't know that there'll be any increase in monetary expenses on behalf of opening up the conversation, because most of the solutions that we're going to be implemented through implementation of programs within the Recharge Master Plan. Honestly believe that that's probably going to be the mechanism. And there's still going to be additional work that's going to be necessary over an MZ1 and MZ2, mainly in the area of monitoring. I've talked about this now for about 3 months, that one of the commitments that Water Master is making as a part of this process of expanding the desalters and the activity at the southern end of the basin is that we do additional monitoring as part of this process so that we recognize anything that starts to occur that we did not predict would occur. And so there is going to be some additional expenses, but those would have come along whether this committee was expanded or not expanded. And then the commitment to the MZ1 managed zone, the heel portion of the shoe up there, that is still going to be ongoing. We're still committed to the ASR program that Chino Hills is going to be implementing. We're still committed to doing the continued investigation in that whole area. And then if inelastic subsidence does occur elsewhere within the basin that we did not predict, then we'll at least have the committee in place to be able to take immediate action if that does occur.
So. Maybe I didn't ask the question.
Okay.
What I meant by that is if there's budget set up for MZ1,
MZ3, MZ4, yeah. They've got it consolidated, correct?
And we can still, in terms of the fact that the committee is together, doesn't mean that we need to consolidate them into one accounting. We can still keep track of those expenses independently. That's strictly an accounting function. That's fairly, I say fairly simple because I'm not the one that does it. But I think that can be done.
And the second question, or the first question for you, the second question I have. Relative to the past reference.
It doesn't change the peace agreement.
It doesn't. No, the fact that the MZ1 committee will be working internally amongst this bigger committee is not a problem.
Okay.
I think Ken mentioned it doesn't change the obligations under the peace agreement.
No, we still have our 6,500 acre feet of obligation. Okay.
No, in 2000.
Those things all continue to exist.
In 2000, we were focused on MZ1. It was a critical area identified. Yeah. Right. Well, we know the basin better today 10 years forward. Right. So. Rather than have an MZ1 committee, an MZ2 committee, an MZ3 committee.
Right.
That makes sense. I just want to say that when you transition over sometimes, contractually sometimes, there's issues involved with that.
Okay. Any other questions of staff or Andy?
I have one quick question for Andy. Are your studies currently moving across or expanding across the entire basin? Or have you collected data, I guess is what my question is. Have you collected data over in the MZ3 area?
The radar satellite imagery that you're seeing here in shaded orange and yellow, yes, we collect that data across the entire basin. The ground level surveys you see as the dark black lines, those right now, the only line that really comes outside of MZ1 is the one that goes down by the DeSalter well field. You can see down there along Kimball Avenue. And that we've always been doing as part of the MZ1 program. Right now, there's no vision to expand that network across the basin, but it's certainly open for discussion in this committee.
No identified need at this time.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. The recommendation before us is to rename the MZ1 Technical Committee to Land Subsidence Committee and that it be opened up to all water master parties.
So moved.
Do I have a second?
Second.
Okay. Any opposed?
Mark, I have a comment. Andy, did you just say that the land survey plan that's depicted on the screen is not going to expand? I thought there was discussion in the CEQA documentation that
that's the survey down at the bottom.
Right.
Yeah, that will be that portion of that has not been, if I'm not mistaken, I don't think we've been doing that the last few years, so that will be expanded to now include that information again. So we're expanding our ground level surveys to include that a section along Kimball that has been currently abandoned at this point. Mm-hmm. But we do have past data in that area, and so we'll incorporate that with the new expansion.
Okay, so the Kimball survey has not been accomplished in the past, but will be accomplished.
It is going to be accomplished this year.
Yeah.
In fact, this fall, it's being reoccupied this fall, but the past 2 years, it has not been surveyed.
There was an initial survey.
Yes.
Oh, yeah, there's been a number of surveys since 2000.
But we abandoned that as a strategy about 2.5 years ago because of cost, and we didn't have a need for it at that time. But as part of the expansion of the CDA, we've recommitted ourselves to going back because the satellite imagery is not very good in that area because of the agricultural use. Mm-hmm.
And currently, it's contemplated that only the Kimball line would be surveyed, or is it contemplated that there would be further survey lines run off of the Kimball line?
Not this fiscal year. There's no budget this fiscal year except for the Kimball line. But this blue area here is going to be a topic of future discussion for expanding the surveys in that area.
The crosshatched area?
Yes, the blue crosshatched area.
Thank you.
Any other questions, staff? We have a motion and a second before us. Any opposed? Motion passes unanimously. Well 7, location of well 1-17.
Okay. This is what you see in front of you is a map of the area of concern for the DeSalter expansion. The yellow dots represent the locations of wells as that were modeled for hydraulic control. And as a part of the process working with the CDA parties and the expansion parties in general, is that Watermaster is committed to working with them as a partnership as they move through this decision-making about where sites are going to be located and whether or not those sites would, in fact, meet the requirement to address hydraulic control. And so as sites are being proposed, Watermaster is providing them with a material physical injury analysis for those wells. We've already done it with two of them, 16 and 18, that are shown on the map. That was done a couple of months ago. Since then, 16 has been dug. They're going to be moving to 18 momentarily to get up there within the next few days. And now they've identified the well 17 location, and we have done a material physical injury through Wildermuth that says that there should not be any material physical injury as long as they pump from the upper zone, and as they are committed to do in the entire area. And so that information is here, and what we're asking for at this point in time is for the approval of the well location for well number 17. And Andy, again, is here. He's the one who did the material physical injury, and he's working directly with CDA parties on the well locations and is working with them as they dig these wells to come up with recommendations for them.
Yeah. Who owns the underlying property?
The I-18 is CDA property. 16 is IEUA property. 17, I'm not sure. I think it's in right-of-way, but I'm not 100% sure.
It's
maybe
flood control.
Maybe somebody, if anybody's here from the expansion group, but I'm not sure. It's in a public right-of-way of some sort.
I don't know.
Sure. Okay. Looks like CF. Yeah.
Now, have we approved the location of well I-16 and well 18?
Yes, we've already done that.
Yep. Okay. So. Okay, and then looks like the location of I-17 is almost exact to where the modeling location
yeah, it's,
is.
Yeah, it is. And now, I also say is that right now the CDA expansion group is working with the county on locating the additional wells that are necessary along Kimball to be on county property, right at their edge of their property near Kimball. So as those wells locations are further defined, we'll be coming back with similar proposals to the group. My guess is probably in January, sure. January, February time frame.
Any question of staff?
Just a general.
Oh, go ahead. I had a question for Andy again. On I-16, have you had preliminary results on the production rate for that well then? Sounds like it's been...
We haven't met with geoscience yet. Okay. On that, but what they did tell us, I can share you with you what they did tell us, that they drilled down to about 150 feet or so, and then they hit clay pretty consistently down to about 450-500 feet, something like that. So
well, and I guess my question relates back to the original modeling for the work that was done to mm-hmm. to identify achieving hydraulic control, and the question is, were all six of these wells necessary when you did the model to achieve hydraulic control?
I can tell you that this we modeled this and we did show hydraulic control, but we didn't try to come in and optimize and go to five wells or four wells and try to achieve mm-hmm. hydraulic control. That we ran a couple of model runs with different orientations of the well field. This is the one that was decided on, mm-hmm. But we didn't try to optimize and explore various numbers of wells and pumping rates in order to show, you know, the minimum amount.
Well, and I guess that's where I was going with is the actual production rate. If it turns out that these production rates are lower, mm-hmm. you know, than what you modeled, do you have a sense that we would still get hydraulic control with these six wells?
I don't believe we've done that.
Okay.
That work. Now, when we did model these wells, they're not all pumping at the same rate. I-16 is actually pumping at a much lower rate because we know it's on the side of the basin and it's got potential boundary conditions that might limit its production capabilities. So that right. one was modeled at a lower pumping rate than the other wells that are more right. centrally located in the basin.
All right.
Okay. Any other questions?
Yeah. I-17, Bluff 17, we're talking about. Mm-hmm. You said that was in a county right-of-way. Is that a channel or is that a street or what?
Well, the channel is right there, and I'm assuming that it's in the right-of-way with the channel, but I'll be honest with you, I'm not 100% sure.
Is it cement line channel or is it the natural earth?
It's cement line.
I'm pretty sure it's cement lined all well south of that. So,
just one other question. It's unrelated to I-17, but Andy, the older original desalter wells shown as 1, 2, 3, and 4?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Are they all currently in production?
Yes. Those are the so-called bypass wells. Yeah. They're deep. They're pretty low.
But they're all in production.
They are.
Okay. I do have a proposed change to the staff recommendation, which would read approve CDA's proposed location of well I-17 subject to screening in accordance with water master criteria.
I don't have a problem with that.
Okay. I don't know if anybody has
That's
a problem
pretty
with that.
Universally yeah. known at this point. So.
Well, yeah, I understood that, but it just the motion is just
so moved.
Okay. Do I have a second? Second.
Could you repeat the motion, Mark?
Approve CDA look. Approve the CDA's proposed location of well I-17 subject to screening in accordance with water master criteria. That's the shallow screening criteria, essentially.
I'll second that.
Okay. We have a motion and a second. Any opposed? Motion passes unanimously. Reports and updates.
Yeah, a few items to report on. With regard to the paragraph 31 appeal, the Court of Appeals has established a briefing schedule, and according to that schedule, the non-agricultural pools opening brief is due November 29th. They do get an automatic grace period of 15 days, so we may not see their brief until the middle of December, but the Court of Appeal has established a deadline. In addition, the appellate court is considering this case for their settlement process, which is basically a mediation process. Auction. And so they issued a questionnaire to all the parties asking for our recommendations concerning that settlement process. A copy of Watermaster's completed form is on the back table. The board authorized us last week to respond. The all of the answers are fairly short, but the bottom line you'll find in the answer to question 6, where Watermaster says that we do not believe that this appeal is proper for the settlement process, that given the nature of it, we believe that it needs to be resolved as quickly as possible. And so that's been Watermaster's response. We did distribute this to counsel for all three pools prior to filing it. We had feedback from the appropriated pool counsel as well as ag pool counsel, and that feedback was reflected in the draft. We had no feedback from the non-agricultural pool counsel. The second item, resolution 2010-04, that was approved by the board last Thursday. One of the contemplated steps in the overall improvement is to send it to the court and ask for court approval. We had preliminarily thought that we would do that in January, and we have a January 21st court date set for that. There are some other trailing issues, such as individual appropriator approvals of associated resolutions, and then also that LRP funding issue. Those may delay it so that we can't get the resolution to the court for approval in January. So we'll keep you updated as we learn more about those issues. But the board has approved the resolution. And that was a unanimous vote. The third item, the judgment update. When we were at the court in October, on October 8th, the judge expressed some dissatisfaction at the fact that the official version of the judgment is still the 1978 copy and does not reflect any of the amendments that have been made since then. We all sort of keep track of them in our heads. But that makes it very difficult for somebody just picking up the judgment to actually see what the judgment says. So he asked that we produce an updated version of the judgment that incorporates all amendments and submit it to him for approval. When he approves it, that will then become the official judgment. So he asked that we also do that at the January 21st hearing date. So we will be submitting that in December, and we'll pass it through the pools and the advisory committee and the board in December before we file it.
Michael, is that a convenience, or is this an order that's being made? Is this for his convenience so he can catch up to make it easier, or is it, well, how do we want to look at this?
Well, it's for his convenience, but it's really for the convenience of everybody, too, because in reality, if you pick up the judgment, you don't know what it says. The part you're looking at may have been amended, deleted, changed, and you don't know unless you have all of the history of what's gone on. It seems a proper request. It did take the form of an order, so we have been ordered to do it.
I was just thinking in terms of convenience versus an extended additional cost to do it, but it sounds like we would all benefit from it. So
yeah, and the cost won't be that significant.
Although I'll point out, you notice there's no category in my budget for judgment consolidation.
Let alone getting consensus that
yes,
it doesn't really reflect all the amendments made to the judgment.
Right, and we don't anticipate anybody's going to, at least the arguments should be fairly straightforward about whether something is or is not an amendment. But a few years ago, staff went through this exercise and produced what we've called the unofficial reference version, and some people use that version now. So a lot of the work is already done, and so it won't be a significant amount of work to complete it.
But I like the way Michael opens up that when you pick it up, you don't understand what's in it. After he makes the changes, I still doubt anybody's going to go pick it up and understand what it says. My own opinion. It's not easy read. Anything else?
Nothing else. I'm happy to answer questions.
Any questions of Michael? Ken?
Yeah, legislatively, I'm sure all of you have been paying close attention to the results of both the federal and state elections. Let's start at the local level in terms of changes that have been made here locally. In terms of IEOA, no changes there. I understand Three Valleys has one change that's going to be made to their representative from Pomona. One change there. I don't know if anything occurred at Western. I haven't been able to pull that one up yet. No changes.
Yeah, the only change at Inland Empire is they do have a new representative who replaced John Anderson, who retired.
Yeah, Steve Eli is now going to be taking over there. It was a two-man race, and Steve won with about 66% of the vote. So he'll be joining the board in January. In terms of the local elections here, statewide, I will tell you that Jerry Brown with governor, kind of a good news, bad news kind of a situation.
Please tell me the good news.
I'll refrain from going into the good news. Because I'm not sure I can delineate it very well. But Chris, some of you know Chris Fromm. Chris Fromm is a lobbyist for the California Groundwater Coalition. And Chris and I had a conversation about 4 or 5 days ago when all of the polls were starting to show that Jerry Brown was taking the lead. She had lunch with him about a week and a half ago. And the discussion that they were having was over the bond measure that was now postponed to 2012. And he expressed to her and to the group that was there that he is very much in favor of a program of conveyance around the Delta. That's the good news. The bad news is that when she asked him about the criticisms he had, because he was also vocally critical of some of the elements within SB 7, she asked him point blank, are you telling us that you're going to support it, or are you asking for a do-over? And his answer was, I'm looking for a do-over. That's not good news, because any of you who've worked in Sacramento know that anytime you try and reconstruct something you've already got, it doesn't look anything like what you started with. And I think that's what he's looking for. So I'm not so sure at this point in time what that means to the potential of a water bond election in 2012. But and this was all pre-election discussion. And now that he's actually going to be the governor, we'll see what actually takes place. But that's just a heads up in terms of what his initial thinkings were about the bond. and the election coming up in 2012. Legislatively, locally, really no changes here locally of any major nature in terms of the assembly, and et cetera. Federally, some good news comes out of the fact the change in the Congress, and that two representatives from local here will probably find themselves back into leadership positions in both the Appropriative Pool and Rules Committee. Appropriations Committee. You know, you can tell I'm thinking Watermaster all the time. The Appropriations Committee and Rules Committee will both have chairmen from a local.
What are you hearing
area.
On
Lewis is going to end up is slated to go back into that at this point in time.
Different.
You did? Well, it's at this point when they talked about it, they talk about Lewis going back.
Maintain the military side, but not federal.
Yeah. So we will have some influence there. Grace Napolitano, who has been a tremendous asset for us, will lose her chairmanship. If you're involved with Title 16 programs, Bureau of Rec, she will lose a little bit of her clout as chairman of the subcommittee that oversees those funds for Title 16. Recharge update. You have a report that includes the September numbers, and we had about 184 acre feet of stormwater recharge that month, and about 830, so roughly 1,000 acre feet of recharge. We do have, again, the 300 acre feet that you approved today, that you recommended approval on. That is ongoing. It just started, I understand, yesterday. And then there is also going to be another 20 feet of acre feet of water, roughly 20 feet acre feet of water, that's going to be pulled out of the six basins and moved into Turner Basin. That will just become abandoned water. It will show up on the recharge report as stormwater. And it'll be recharged because they have to clean out the basin over there, and they have no place to put it, so they're putting it into our channels, and we're saying thank you very much. We'll take it. And that's it.
Okay. Any questions, Ken? Okay. You have cash disbursements for October, newspaper articles in your committee package. Any pool member comments? Okay. I do have one, and we've talked about this intermittently, and then I was talking to John Muir last week about, he kind of came with ideas, maybe the Appropriative Pool should consider getting together in some sort of workshop environment to start talking about prioritizing some of the things that the pool's working on, maybe come up with a different structure on how to tackle multiple items at once. For instance, we have a subcommittee for the auction. Well, maybe we disappoint one committee member to take lead of that. If we have a different subcommittee set up, maybe we just appoint one committee member to take the lead in that and some kind of lead responsibility for that. And it seems like maybe it allows to do some more things. So I don't know how the other pool members feel about that. Certainly there's a couple items that I see pending. There's probably multiple items. We have the auction before us. We also have the Watermaster Board's five-year rotation sequence is coming up, so under the umbrella of governance, we might want to spend some time talking about either board configuration and or governance. So really the idea would be to see if the Appropriative Pool wants to prioritize some activities and start looking at ways of doing it. And again, it might be a good way of doing it in some sort of workshop setting, which is a little bit more informal and allows some exchange of ideas. And just throwing out there, maybe we can talk about a little bit more detail in December, but certainly maybe as part of the next calendar year process, we can start working on that in more detail.
I think it'd be a good idea.
So do I.
Mm-hmm. I have a comment.
Okay.
Some may have heard, others may have not, but I've informed my board of directors last Tuesday night that I'd be leaving Cucamonga effective the end of January. I'm not retiring. Mark asked me if I was retiring today. I'm going on to different, hopefully bigger and better things, but it's been my pleasure to work with this pool since 1991. I'll still be here for a couple more meetings anyway, but I wanted to just for the record say thank you and look forward to working with you and seeing you down the road, different capacity. So.
Okay. We have future meetings before us. If there's no other questions, we're adjourned. 1 hour exactly.